our chance for crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass makes heaven the middle of it. Grass makes heaven the middle. We are grass makes heaven.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler along with my co-host,
Charlotte Littlefield. Good evening, George.
Charlotte, how you doing? All right? Everything going all right?
Yeah, just getting ready for some cold weather. December's here.
Well, it's already 34 degrees up there today, I think, isn't it, in Missouri?
Yeah, we're looking to maybe get some snow.
Boy, it's cold and rainy here in Austin, Texas on a Saturday night. Boy, this is December 3rd. 2016. We want to welcome all of our listening audience to the program. We've been on the air over 10 years now, and our first program was a what? Election thing, Charlotte? Wasn't that it?
Yeah. Vote integrity.
Yeah. We've been discussing this Pizzagate, and we have some click-offs there we're going to put up. You can find on our site right now. In fact, we're going to put up an outline of this program, and our program outline, which has a lot of click-offs. But we did a program back in March of 2015, and we interviewed the co-writers, co-authors of a book called Confessions of a D.C. Madam. And in there, Henry Vinson, who was a madam, so to speak, this was sort of a play on words. This was a man running a gay escort service in the Washington, D.C. area. Okay? And so he had a lot to say and a lot of insight about what was going on up there. And all the VIPs were involved in one way or another with this. Boy, the experience that he had was very, very dreadful at times. But we're going to play this clip, and it's about 5 minutes and 47 seconds long, and then we're going to discuss the clip a little bit. And he discusses some very interesting things, but that's coming up right now.
One of the most sensational stories that could come to your mind would be what exactly about your past experiences in D.C.? What insight or story could you tell us about?
Well, Nick, Craig Spence had some great parties at his house. He was a great entertainer, and he would have celebrities there, politicians. It truly would look like the who's who. And his parties were something else to see. I mean, he spared no expenses. He would give lavish gifts. But I think his late-night tour of the White House is probably the biggest thing, that the most popular thing that's been talked about, is Craig Spence having so much power that he could arrange a midnight tour of the White House.
For male escorts, Craig Spence arranged a midnight tour of the White House on a number of occasions. It even included gay escorts that Henry employed, which is kind of interesting.
Well, did they come back with souvenirs, or did Craig Spence, did he display some kind of a special plate that he'd gotten out of the White House, or what, in his mansion there? What was that about?
Well, he did have the Truman China. He did have a lot of things from the White House, but, again, this man was very connected. He was protected by the Secret Service. He had an entourage of protection. He would had earpieces that he talked through. I mean, he was a very protected man, always had an entourage of protection.
I think it's interesting. Craig Spence had like a Praetorian guard around him. And if you're blackmailing very powerful people, that's a very dangerous business, because powerful people generally have access to their own thugs. So Craig Spence had to be protected, and he had Secret Service agents and others protecting him, because he was blackmailing some of the most powerful people in the country. And if you do that, it can really truncate your longevity. So Spence had this Praetorian Guard that was always with him. And whenever Henry went over to Spence's house, he would always be vetted by a Secret Service officer or one of Spence's bodyguards before he even entered the house.
So Henry, they would pat you down or what before you could enter the house to search you for a weapon or what?
They would always look over you. They were very protective of him. You couldn't get in. That's right, they would.
Now, getting back to these White House tours, were there not some children that were involved in the scandal out there in the Franklin scandal that actually experienced tours through the White House or not?
Well, there was one who came forward, but two of Henry's escorts were actually given late-night tours of the White House, and that's what the Washington Times reported on, and that made the big headlines, Henry didn't believe it initially, but then it was confirmed by the Washington Times. So it was mostly Craig Spence liked to show off to the gay escorts that Henry employed. As I said earlier, he took two on midnight tours of the White House.
Now, these stories were put out, published by Washington Times, which is considered to be what, the conservative newspaper in the area versus Washington Post or what?
That's right. The Washington Times is thought to be the most conservative, I suppose. But
The Washington Times was trying to break this story open, which is kind of ironic because it was happening under a conservative Bush 1 administration. And it was the Washington Post. I mean, the Washington Times really collected a lot of corroboration about Craig Spence's blackmail operation, collected a lot of information about how Spence has conducted his activities, collected corroboration that Spence was indeed a CIA asset. And the Washington Post just rolled over all the reportage by the Washington Times. And the Washington Post even got the New York Times and the LA Times to jump on its bandwagon and kick the Washington Times to the side of the curb. So ultimately, you have three entities. You've got the Washington Post, you've got the New York Times, and you've got the LA Times that are saying that everything that is being reported by the Washington Times is just erroneous and made up or sensationalized. And we saw this happen in the Gary Webb story, Dark Alliance, where the Washington Post, the New York Times, and also the LA Times all teamed up to just destroy Gary Webb's career after he wrote that series, Dark Alliance, that showed that there was a connection between the CIA, the Contras, and the cocaine epidemic in Los Angeles.
Yeah, Charlotte, did you get that okay? Boy, that was something else, wasn't it? And it was amazing that we produced that. And this came long before, a year and a half ago, before we got into this latest so-called Pizzagate. And we don't really know what's going on this Pizzagate. We have a click-off up there, though, on our site that should give our listening audience, if you go into thesecrettruth.com, we have a click off up there that has 13 essentials of items, or you could say 13 most essential data points in the Pizzagate of the pedophilia allegations. And this is a pretty accurate thing that we put up there, a click off to a site called The Last American Vagabond. But I discovered it a few days ago, and it gives it's a pretty objective list. So if you want to get into that. Now, on this clip, if you'll notice, this Craig Spence was the man around which they were talking about who conducted these midnight tours of the White House. He was evidently CIA, and he had a honeypot operation that he was running there in Washington, D.C., and that's how they were entrapping people, see. And that's what they'll do on some of these operations, these CIA operations, is they'll be running some kind of a honeypot operation to entrap people, and then they'll have rooms in there with video and sound and everything else to record the person's sexual proclivity, so to speak. But also, did you catch that at the end, what they said about the Washington Times, Charlotte?
Not entirely.
Well, the Washington Times was a moon. It was a moon operation. Sigmund Moon, the Korean, was owning that at one time. I don't know who owns it today, but it's always considered, the Washington Times has always been considered the conservative newspaper in the area. The Washington Post, with Katherine Graham behind it, had made a deal with the CIA, and they were a CIA front wherever they were reporting, and their agents were working hand in glove with the CIA. And I think Project Mockingbird was set up by Alan Dulles way back in the 50s, and it was to take over some of the main media operations in the country, see. And so that's basically what's been going on since the 50s that Alan Dulles set up. Now, we have on our second hour tonight, we're going to play back or rebroadcast that whole hour that I conducted with an interview with Henry Vinson, who was the author, co-author, along with Nick Bryan. Now, Henry Vinson was actually the madam or the guy that ran the call service, the gay call service, and he got a lot of pressure from Craig Spence to provide younger children to some of these men, but he resisted that, and as a result, he claims that he spent two prison sentences because he did not succumb to the pressure to provide underage children to these men up there in Washington, D.C. area. So you can listen to that during the second hour. Now, and then we have click-offs there that you can go into and learn more about Craig Spence and so forth. But now, just recently, Charlotte, Fidel Castro passed away in Cuba, right?
Yes, he did.
And we've reestablished diplomatic relations with Cuba. In my opinion, we should have done this years ago, okay? Now, Frontline did a story a while back, and we have that click off there available to you to go in. And in that interview that they did, Frontline did, PBS program, they uncovered that there was a very, very strong evidence of the Cubans dealing in cocaine going through Cuba. And that's sort of my feel for it over the years, is that they could have done away with Fidel for years for earlier. After the Bay of Pigs, they could have gotten to him one way or another, but they didn't. And I believe they didn't do that because I believe Cuba ended up to be a stopover for drugs coming into the United States. A stopover is shipment point for drugs coming into the United States and then going into Europe. That's sort of the feel that I had. But anyway, this click off goes to the Frontline, the PBS special called Cuba and Cocaine, and you can read that at your leisure, okay? Now we're getting down to these these appointments, Charlotte. Have you seen some of those? What's your sort of feel about some of this, these appointments that they're occurring?
Well, I really don't have much input on that one, George. I get a lot of different information on the internet. I'm not getting it from a single news source, and it's kind of choppy about what Trump decided to do and what he did not decide to do.
Yeah, some of the people, we have other click-offs too on this outline page that is up there now, and he's got an awful number of Goldman Sachs people in there, see? The Mnuchin guy, Steve Mnuchin, is coming in from 17 years. Actually, he comes out of Yale as a Skull and Bones member, goes over to Goldman Sachs for 17 years. Then he comes out with about $40 million worth of net worth, and he starts producing and financing movies and things like that in Hollywood. And then also One West Bank, he was head of that, and there's questions about some of the foreclosure you know, that they had there. It was a bank that had a lot of foreclosures that they took over, but with the government guaranteeing 95% of any losses. And so there's questions about whether or not that One West Bank handled those foreclosures properly. And I had a personal experience with a client with them at the time that this was happening, and it wasn't a satisfactory. It looked like to me that they were just running people through there to make money, and they didn't really care about curing foreclosures. That's my own personal opinion. But we do have some people in there, some click-offs in there, some out of Vanity Fair, and then we have other click-offs from the New Yorker and different opinions about what's going on. Now, this thing about propaganda about Russia, what do you think about that, Charlotte?
Oh, it's a bunch of foo-foo as far as I can tell. The websites that they're accusing,
yeah.
You know, it's just ridiculous.
It is, and, you know, I don't see how the Democrats can get away with some of that stuff, do you? I mean, it's so outlandish, you know what I mean? And Trump has denied it, you know what I mean, the whole time. But it seems to have, it's got legs with some of these sites and so forth. And it's just amazing how they can continue to do this, that Russia was controlling. Oh, there is one. I put up the wrong name on this full frontal. Her name is Samantha, okay? But I think I put up there Samantha B, okay, instead of Barbara B, as should be. But I'll correct that on the click-off so people aren't, you know what I mean, mixed up on that. But anyway, further on down, we'll talk about this full frontal program that's out there on the web. And it's actually on Turner Broadcast System on the cable channel. That Turner still has a cable channel. And they're producing some all kinds of different kinds of productions. Some are serials. Friends of mine just have a new show up there. Search Party, I think, is what it's called. That's right out of Austin, Texas, and I think a Rogers has that. Charles Rogers and others are producing that called Search Party. That's on TBS. But that's an overnight success right out of Austin, Texas, and I wish them the best of luck. But anyway, TBS is producing this program that this Samantha
Hello,
B is doing.
You've been selected to participate in
and
a short
so,
30-second survey.
So,
to say thank you, you'll gain access
anyway,
to our exclusive offers.
Anyway, did you hear that, Charlotte?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, did you hear the offer that came on? Or
I don't, no, I didn't
yeah.
hear it. No.
Oh, okay, good, good. It was some kind of you know, I have a lot of pages up right now, so... as long as you didn't hear it, that's fine. It won't go out on the air or anything. But anyway, we've got a lot of controversy coming from the hard right or the really conservative right about some of these new Donald Trump appointments and so forth. And I just don't, they're billionaires, a lot of them. I think we talked last week about Betsy DeVos, her brother.
Right.
Yeah. Remember her brother's what? Eric Prince, right?
Right.
And he's connected to Blackwater, and then now he's working for the Chinese, you know? So, and also what was amazing that, he took a call from the Prime Minister of Taiwan the other day, but he didn't call them. See, when you become president, your Secretary of State's supposed to handle all your foreign relations and all your communication between other world leaders, see? Normally, world leaders are not calling each other back and forth. Now this time the media jumped all over it like, oh, that's way off base for him to even do this. But here we have a world leader, a prime minister of Taiwan calling him. So he accepted the call, and I think that was good manners, good courtesy to accept that call. And so, you know, I believe that you know, that was a proper thing to do, say, in that case. But the media is saying, oh, he's building a big case against him, like he's going way off the plantation now, and he's doing things that shouldn't be doing, and he's rebelling against the system and everything else. But I think he was proper in taking that call. But we have the Vanity Fair and the New Yorker, you know, and the Russian propaganda messages up there. And we have this thing called, there's a click-off in there that I wanted to bring to your attention, and it's the Library of Babel, okay? And it was a short story written by Jorge Luis Borges, and he was Argentinian. And it's a fascinating story about this big library that has every conceivable combination of every letter and every word of every language existing in every book imaginable in this library. And so people go into the library and they're trying to seek the truth, see, about the real truth. And there's some great guru in there that leads a group around trying to find the one book that in that library, see what I mean, that has the full truth. And so I put that as a click off because Borges was a genius writer, and he was fascinating imagination. My gosh, there's no one that wrote better than him. And so what I was trying to say here was that it sort of denotes the problems of seeking the truth. Haven't you had a hard time at times, Charlotte, getting to the real bottom line on some of these issues?
Yeah, it's, research is difficult sometimes, but yeah, in the end, though, everybody's got a book.
Right, right. But I mean, there's so many opinions out there that it's hard sometimes to fathom or to work through some of those opinions, is it not? You know, at times.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So I mean, we've got to listen to people and be open. That's one thing that in our broadcast experience, and Charlotte probably would agree, is that you've got to at least listen to the counter argument. See, if you don't listen to the counter argument you have an opinion usually to start with. We all do. We're biased in some way. But if we listen to the counter argument, there'll be pieces of that counter argument that might be received very, very well by us because we missed, you know. So it's like testing. You have an opinion. You listen to the counter argument. You're being tested. See, and I think that's very, very good to keep open minded about it. But this Library of Babel was fantastic idea, and it was awful difficult to go through this imaginary library with all these books, with all these words and all these languages to try to find truth there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a fascinating story. And I believe he has this in English, and I think you can find it at Half Price Books or your local bookstore. It's still being distributed and published. Short stories by Jose Luis Borges, Jorge Luis Borges. But anyway, he's a fascinating person. And the next thing I wanted to touch on was there was a big demonstration in the early 1800s in Manchester, England, in Peter Park, I think is what it was called. And they called it, they went in there, the government overreacted and sent a bunch of these, Peter's Field, St. Peter's Field is where the big demonstration occurred. They had between 60 to 80,000 people there, okay? And a cavalry unit charged into the crowd and killed dozens of people and injured hundreds of others. And it was called the Peterloo Massacre in the end, and it set off just a wild, you know what I mean, indignation and by the average person. And Shelley, who this famous poet in England wrote a short story and ended it saying, "We are many and they are few." I don't know if you'll, and it's the Anarchy poem, I think, is what is the name of it. But it was quite happening. But it showed, I think, what we need to see in this, and this example of tyranny, because out of that came, they call the Six Acts in England, okay? And the government, the British government, started cracking down on freedoms that the former citizens had. They had like the Training Prevention Act, Unlawful Drilling Act of 1819, the Seizure of Arms Act that gave local magistrates the powers within the disturbed counties to search any private property for weapons and seize them and arrest the owners. Now, our listening audience, are you beginning to see where we're going with this? This was in England in the 1800s, 1819. Okay? Now we're here in America in 2016. We've got to bring down some of these draconian acts. Another one was the Misdemeanors Act, attempted to increase the speed of the administration of justice by reducing the opportunities for bail and allowing for speedier court processing. Another one, the Seditious Meetings Prevention Act, required the permission of a sheriff or magistrate in order to convene any public meeting of more than 50 people. And then the Blasphemous or Seditious Libels Act. It toughened the existing laws to provide for more punitive sentences for the authors of such writings. See, so they had, and then the sixth one was the newspaper and stamp duties. And it extended taxes to cover those publications which had escaped duty by publishing opinion, not news. So all of these, in essence, were to curtail the freedoms of the average English citizen. So I'm giving this as an example of occurring in 1819. Are you kidding? This is 2016. We've got all these Homeland Securities Acts and all this NDAA, National Defense Authorization Act. We've got those laws in place that England had there in 1819 here in this country, and we've got to be really careful. Well, I mean, it's bad, isn't it, Charlotte?
Yeah, it sure seems that way.
And this fake news thing, that's our next topic that we're going to take up here briefly, is that this concept that has been floated, okay? In other words, we've got this election. Trump is elected. It looks like that these recounts are not going to work out for him. And so the Democratic left is mad as hell about it. And all of a sudden, this fake news concept pops up, see? And then we have this Samantha Bee, I should say, on the air on YouTube now. You can go in and watch her programs, but it's actually a Turner Broadcast System. But anyway, we got that coming out. It's all ridicule. You know, we covered that birth certificate out of Hawaii. You remember that? And we covered the fact that it was a forgery. I mean, it was made up. And then on one of her programs that I viewed, she puts the birth certificate up there and passes it off as a legitimate birth certificate. And these people like Trump and others and these false fake news people are calling it fake and stuff like that. But it is fake. See, I mean, the ridicule that comes from out of the left and this concept of fake news is ridiculous. And what we did on our site, and you can go there now, and look at the list of some of these. There's a site called Pro or Not, Prop or Not, meaning Propaganda or Not, and we have that as a click off. Anyway, if you go in there and drill down into that site, it has a list of people that they consider to be fake news generators. Okay. And at the top of the list is InfoWars. and next after that is Zero Hedge. And they go down Natural News is on their list. Okay. And Carbet Report. These are all sites that I get good news out of. Now there is one down in there. Ron Paul Institute. They're calling him fake news. Are you kidding me? He has more integrity than all of Congress put together. What do you think, Charlotte?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, and they have him in this.
That's absolutely ridiculous.
I mean, this is a fake news Ron Paul Institute. He stands for truth, more truth than any of these people that have ever lived in Congress or ever will be stand up. And that is, this is how fake this whole concept of fake news is, see? Anyway, further down there, they do have Veterans Today. In my opinion on Veterans Today, I've got a wishy-washy opinion on that. Some of what they put up is okay. Some of it is not. So them being on this list, I'm not going to argue with that much. Now, further down the list, though, they have two. The last two listed here are globalresearch.ca, which is out of Canada. That's a fine example of very, very good reporting. And then after that, Paul Craig Roberts. You know, we've interviewed him, Charlotte. And he's a fine person, and he puts out some very, very good, news. And so I mean, it gets sort of ridiculous after a while to try to, you know what I mean, talk to people that put out lists like this. Well, what do you think, Charlotte?
Well, I know Breitbart's under attack. You know, they got somebody trying to interfere with their sponsors.
Oh, that's right. They pulled some advertising. Now, on this list, I don't see Breitbart, but on other lists, there's other sites, I think, that they put Breitbart on there, okay? And now the thing is, this Bannon fella, Steve Bannon, okay? He left there and went and took over the strategy post there, advisor to Trump. And between him and the press that Trump had, they put out some very, very sharp strategy in his speeches that captured the American public. And so, I mean, there's four or five things there that are really important for Trump to accomplish. And I would say something like immigration. I mean, we've got to control that. You've noticed that it's out of control, isn't it, Charlotte, huh?
The numbers are absolutely staggering. And what's happening in Europe,
right?
We cannot let that happen here.
I know, but and in Germany it's really happening, and also there are rape gangs out there in England. They got rape gangs, and they're jumping young girls, and because they have a short dress on, these Arabs are somehow thinking that they're ladies of the night because they have short dresses and things on, and that's just not the case. So many of these ladies over there in England and in Germany, there have been all kinds of rapes also. It's happening in Sweden. I mean, and it seems like the authorities don't want to back up the people and their charges and so forth. And Dr. Cofield, who is an anti-cancer, alternative cancer doctor, has recently testified on talk shows that it's very bad in Germany, and they're putting people out of their houses. They're just giving them probated sentences, some of these rapists over there, and they're just not treating them properly with the proper charges that they deserve. So, I mean, we've got this, you know, Merkel is experiencing a very a wave of unrest and protest against her administration. And it's causing a nationalist movement in Germany. There's already one in France. And look what happened in there with all those attacks and that large population of Muslims there in France. So this is not anything to think lightly about, but we've got to really try to solve this. And they're going to have to start enforcing the law over there and putting those people, giving them long prison sentences and everything. I mean, they just, you know, I mean, they can't excuse them because of some kind of a culture deal, right, Charlotte? You know?
Right, sure.
And I think that's what they're doing is they're saying, oh, they're from a different culture, and so we just can't, you know, do this and that. And okay, now we get back to Standing Rock. They've been arresting people up there at Standing Rock on these, these activists and these rallies and so forth that were artists, were journalists, okay? And so they're complaining about that also. There was one other thing that I forgot to mention at the top of our program here, and we sort of want to dedicate this program tonight, both hours I would like to dedicate to Tom Philpott, okay? He was a professor at the University of Texas at Austin. He primarily specialized in sociology. But he was a really open person. He took on really, you know, really valid fights and so forth. And he was someone that when he stood for something, he stood up against something. He didn't waver and back down. But tonight we want to dedicate. And to our listening audience, I know some of those out there knew Tom Philpott, and I think he was married to a former city council member, but he did pass away a number of years ago. But before he passed away, he did a special program on the Access Television here in Austin, And he got onto a story, he and several other men did, and I think the head of the Texan out there, the Daily Texan, was part of the investigation. But they started getting onto these boys for sale. That's what was the name of the program that was aired on Access Television. So I have, three click-offs there on our site tonight. The first one is Boys for Sales Part 1, Boys for Sales Part 2, and then there's a third click off, Boys for Sales. It's one large file, but it's about a 1.5 to 2 hour, two interviews together. And Tom Philpott is being interviewed by a local Access Television host there. And I'll say that this is some of Tom Philpott's greatest and most dedicated work, because it had to do with a pedophile ring that was like a call, nationwide call pedophile ring that they uncovered in Houston and in Atlanta and did this program on it. But it was shut down by a radio station in Houston. They actually had a documentary done by a local television station. But after it aired the first time, then they closed down the documentary. Some real powers down there in the Houston area. So this pedophile stuff is real. We don't know all the details about the Pizza Gate. We're giving you these 13 essential questions here at the top of our page tonight on the Pizza Gate pedophilia allegations. We're letting you decide and research this. There's virtually thousands of people that are serious investigators looking into this. And I think it came out of that Anthony Weiner's arrest up in New York and the subsequent material that was found on his computer. So I think some of this got started then. But just like what we played our clip earlier, and you can hear in the second hour tonight, is there's real pedophilia going on. It's at the top levels of our government, of our VIPs. And they're into some of the most wicked and ugly and evil things that you could ever imagine. And it's real. A man that was ran a gay call service, Confessions of a D.C. Madam, Henry Vinson, testifies on during our second hour to what he did up there and what he engaged in, and the people that he came in contact with and so forth. So it's just dreadful what's happening out here in the so-called marketplace in D.C. My gosh, Charlotte, that thing is something else, isn't it?
Yeah, the one of the things a person has to get over when looking at Pizzagate is the idea that pedophilias have a special technical language among themselves,
right,
that uses common foods and, you know, and slang in such a way as to communicate.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, once they give you the code, it's easy to, you know, to see that for yourself when you go in and look at the stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's shocking. It's devastating. It must be stopped. I mean, this is terrible that children are, you know, what's happening to the children.
Yeah, I mean, the poor little kids. And you know where this, the Franklin cover-up, you know, we interviewed John DeCamp before in the past. We don't have that click-off here on this. But he wrote a book called The Franklin Cover-Up. And it was in Nebraska. And it had to do with pedophilia up there being practiced by some of the upper level Republicans, okay? And there was a local savings and loan president or director, Larry King, but this was not the Larry King that we know of that's on CNN and all that. This is a different one. This Larry King was a black man, and he did facilitate much of what is in this book in the Franklin cover-up. But John DeCamp wrote that, and at the time he was part of the state legislature of Nebraska, well thought of individual, and he wrote a scathing attack on about and went into detail. And he, in this book, some of the young boys and girls were actually taken. They testified to being taken to Washington, D.C. for pedophilia activities, but One or two of them went on that tour that we talked about in that clip earlier of the White House, and so later on they put some of those people in prison. Can you believe that? When they came back, you know, you remember what Ted Gunnarsson? We interviewed him a while back, Charlotte. Remember?
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm.
And he said there were two FBIs. Okay. He said that there's an FBI that he was part of. In fact, he ran the L.A. office for a number of years, which had, I think, 40 or 50 agents. It's such a big, field station and all that. But anyway, he said that there's the FBI he was a part of, and then there's a deeper, darker, operation that the FBI runs, but it's really on dark operations that he was not a part of. But he knew that it did exist because of his decades of, you know, he finally retired and he's passed away now. But we interviewed him up in Dallas one time, and he told us that during an interview there. So there are embedded within any intelligence organization, you're going to find compartmentalized groups that do some very, very dark and dark operations and so forth. We talked about this Russian think influencers, and on this proprop or not.com site, they have, if you go in there and look at that, Samantha B. This comes out of one of her programs on Turner Broadcast System. They have two of these Russian think influencers with a ski mask on, or they look like it was just. Did you see that, Charlotte? Huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What'd you think? It wasn't that yucky, or some real.
My takeaway on that is that they claim to have a list of reputable news outlets, and they got the BBC in there, one of the worst offenders of fake news ever.
Right.
No, prop or not, or propaganda or not, that's what it's short for. Prop or not, waste of your time, in my opinion. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and that Samantha Bee, I wouldn't waste my time looking at anything that she did. You know what I mean? My gosh, what are we doing here, But what it's done, though, it gives ammunition to the liberal left or the liberal Democrats to use against Trump or anyone that is on the conservative right side. See what I mean? And so anybody that stands up to something like that, we're not right about it, or we're wrong, see? Because thus, anything that we say that's controversial is going to be labeled as fake news. And one of the finest guys on there is on this Natural News. You know what I mean?
Yes, the health ranger.
Mike Adams. Mike Adams is one of the finest stand-up guys that you're going to meet. And for him to be on there, but this reminds me of the Southern Poverty Law Center over the years, Charlotte. And you know what? They have similar lists like this. You know what I mean? Some of the people here that are showing up on this fake news are showing up on the Southern Poverty Law Center list, okay? And those are some of the best people I know, and some of them I call friends. You know what I mean? So yeah. that Southern Poverty Law Center is just a propaganda front, too. See, just like this prop or not thing is trying to become. See what I mean? But it's not going to last. I think the American public are fed up with all this government, all this stuff that, they're making 9/11 truthers a part of this list, see, of fake news, okay? In other words, if you're in there on the 9/11 truth, or if you're in there on any conspiratorial theories or anything else, then you're going to be fake news, because they want to sort of discredit you. But you know where that conspiratorial thing came from? It came out of the JFK assassination.
A lot of progress has been made over the years. We now have a much clearer picture.
Which
would you recommend people start with, George, when it comes to JFK?
Well, right now, there was a recent conference that I attended, and I did 11 interviews up in Dallas called the JFKconference.com. And what I would do, I'd go into JFKconference.com, and I would go in and look at all those speakers there and their books that they've written, okay? And we're getting this thing down. There was also a forensic team there that received the body, actually a mortuary team, you would call it. They didn't do forensic medicine on the body, or JFK's body, but they testify now. In fact, John B. Wells, on one of the last conferences up there, I think it was 2015, and we have this on video too that we, you know, turned over to the producers. But John B. Wells got up there and asked one of the team members of the mortuary team, did you see anything on the front brow, you know, or the head of anything that would indicate a bullet wound? And the guy said, well, I guess I shouldn't get into this, but I guess I've got to now, okay? And then he testified on video to John B. Wells' question and answering John B. Wells' question, yes, there was a bullet hole wound in the upper right brow at the hairline, okay? And that probably could have been. Now, a lot of this stuff you can't prove absolutely. That's why, you know, they can come back with you on a conspiratorial attack, right? But when we went behind the picket fence, do you remember up there? We were up there one year?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And anyway, I paced off the distance between the picket fence and the X in the street to where that front shot occurred. And it's only all about 65 feet at the most. So the picket fence is right up closer to the street than it appears on film. See, when you look at film and you're looking at the grassy knoll, you're seeing the picket fence way up on top, but it looks like it's way away from the street, see? But it's actually only 65 feet or closer to the street where that X is in the street. And you know what happened on the 50th anniversary? Someone blacked out that X. You know what happened the next day? Somebody put the X back. I mean, these government people, and that mayor up there, he made on the 50th anniversary, he had to do an application to the city to get into the anniversary, and they cardoned it off, you know. And Alex was back there behind the city hall, you know, raising all kinds of hell, Alex Jones, and because of that. And there were all kinds of, you know, activists and protesters because the mayor would not allow just anyone to come in there to the anniversary, see. I mean, that wasn't right anyway, 50 years. But, you know, and another thing that occurred when we interviewed, what's his name, Gary Fannin the other night, a couple of weeks ago. He was saying that you can't find the good books in their library there in the Texas School Book Depository. But if there's a study area in there, and if you go into the study area and request like Gary Fannin's book and other books like Jim Mars's books, they'll go back in the back somewhere and bring them out to you, see? But they won't have them for sale out there in the bookstore for most of the tourists, see, that go through the Texas School Book Depository. And remember when we went up there on the sixth floor, what did we see up there in the corner, right, Charlotte?
Yeah.
Huh? The nest, the sniper's nest. Oh, nicely behind plexiglass where you couldn't disturb it. And they had it all set up like, boy, this is where the shot occurred and so forth and so forth and so on, you know. And so this is the nth degree. This is the last, you know, word about what happened. And Lee Harvey Oswald did it alone. And that's the rifle. And this is the where he killed our president from, you know what I mean? What kind of malarkey is that, you know? But anyway, we did that, and then John Judge was our last. We did 4 hours in there in the lobby one year, and John Judge, remember him? He was our last guest, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they wouldn't allow him in there, so I had him go down the street and call back on his cell phone, and we interviewed him that way, see? But we started off with that... We got a spoof sort of in a way. We took John F. Kennedy, JFK's speech at the Waldorf Astoria about a year or so before the assassination. I think he was addressing newspaper publishers from all across America. They met there, and he gave a speech. And it's a wonderful 17-minute speech. We played the whole thing, but we acted like we were there, remember? Huh?
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, like this is George Butler along with my host, co-host. And then you said, Charlotte Littlefield. And we're at the Waldorf Astoria. We talked real low, you know, like we were whispering into our microphones so at the on the dais they couldn't hear us or something. But anyway, we pulled that thing off, and that was just like a spoof. But it, and then we had dinner. There was noise out there in a big dining room, sit down, you know, dining speech type of event. There's people picking up plates, and when they're picking up plates, they're throwing diningware in the plates and then putting it in carts, you know, for bus carts and stuff. And what I did was I found some noise like that in a dining room. And I had this friend of ours that edited this thing up for us. I had him edit that background noise in there. And then we took the, Flourish? What was that, song? What is the song called?
I don't know.
Well, anyway, it's a song they play before the president comes out, okay? Mm-hmm. Like, before the president at the White House. What's that? Huh? Something in Flourish?
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, something like that. Yeah, yeah. And anyway, I got that and I put it on that recording. So what we did was Charlotte Littlefield and I we said we're real low. We're at the Waldorf Astoria and we're presently waiting for our president to speak. And then I had him play that song. I put that in there and then he came on with his speech and it was a beautiful, you know. We have it.
Yeah,
we have it. But it was a lot of fun, and then it got people's attention because he said in there a lot of interesting things about secret societies and things like that, that he was going to open up, you know, the public to a lot of different things, you know, that hadn't been exposed before. And boy, it just looked like all those people together got together and did him in, you know. But anyway, there's that site, jfkconference.com, and Judith Ferry Baker, along with Lorian Tilton, produced that up there. And you can order, go to that site, and they're going to have a DVD out in the near future. I can't tell you exactly when that will occur, but they will have one out pretty soon. So go in there and they'll give you instructions on how to order that, you know. But anyway, there's a lot still going on. These recounts are underway. They're only finding one vote so far that goes to Hillary versus Trump in Wisconsin. And what the problem with that, Charlotte, is that some people are saying the Democrats are slowing down the vote recount to try to put it past that deadline that the Electoral College meets, okay? And so if they extend it, I think December 19th, does that sound right, on the Electoral College?
Yeah,
see?
It does.
And so, and I think they have until December 10th, according to Wisconsin law, to conclude the vote, the recount in Wisconsin. And so people are insinuating or accusing the Democrats of slowing down the recount, so it puts them past the December 10th deadline, and they'll say, well, we're not complete yet, and we can't, authorize Wisconsin to be used in the Electoral College on the 19th, see. So, that's ongoing right now. We don't know exactly where that's going to end up, and so, have you heard any more about that, Charlotte?
No, I haven't.
There'd been a big fire also up here in Oakland. There was a rave going on, and there was a fire that started inside this warehouse that didn't have any sprinkler service. It was just, and 9 are dead and 25 are missing, and that just occurred last night, about 10 o'clock last night, and that came up on Drudge. Now, they're accusing Drudge of throwing the election to Hillary, okay? And so that they've always accused him of things like that because he has a lot of power, doesn't he, huh?
Yeah, he gets a lot of views.
Yeah, and he gets millions of views a day, and I think he's over a billion on last year or so, for this year so far, of views. So he's at the top of the whole thing, you know, on the web of people going to – it's a go-to site, you know what I mean? And so it does a good service, you know. And I like many of the – I go in there and read stuff because you see there quickly a lot of very controversial questions that he raises and very interesting articles. Do you find that too, Charlotte, or what do you like to look at in there?
Well, I go over a lot of information. You know, one of the things that I've been spending a lot of time on is these pollution, the chemical and oil spills that have happened around the United States, and I had nothing, I had no knowledge of it.
Right.
I didn't see it in the mainstream media, I didn't see it in the alternative media, and so I started to dig around, and I found that there's been a lot of environmental emergencies to the point that, you know, America or the United States has a lot of people whose water supply is compromised.
Well, that fracking has done that, I think.
Well, I'm not to blame fracking or to blame one or the other, but we have got to clean up our water supply. This is just awful.
Yeah, we talked about this the other day on a telephone conversation, and you know where Trump could do the most good is to allocate some resources on an infrastructure basis to clean up some of these water things. Up in Michigan, we've got to do that for sure, right? I mean,
yeah, they've done a lot of that. I mean, don't know. Once you spill a million gallons of oil, I don't know how you clean it up, George. I mean,
well, you know, Charlotte, you weren't in on this, baby, but there was a oil eater guy out of Dallas. I don't know if you were in that.
Right. Yeah,
you know,
go ahead.
Yeah, and on the oil spill down in the Gulf, okay, the big one, British Petroleum spill and blowout, it was a blowout. He took his method and technology to EPA, and he could have cleaned it up to a large extent. Microbiology solution, okay, the microbes will go in there and combine with the oil, and what happens is the inertness after that. And it actually uses the microbes eat the oil, see? But the process that at the end of that is inertness, you know what I mean? And it's non-polluting. He took this to the EPA. The EPA awarded a big contract to ExxonMobil with a dispersing chemical and dispersed it all around but didn't really clean it up. Now, that's big government at the worst. And you would think that an Obama administration would have done better on environmental issues than that. But
I agree,
it's just like this Obama thing. The software was hundreds of millions into the billions of dollars, and the software didn't work initially on the Obamacare. It didn't even work right. You know, they had to bring somebody else in and pay them millions of dollars to fix it. So this I just hope Trump can do something like immigration. You know, control that. Let's get a tax cut for the people under 40 or 50,000. I was talking to a young man this morning. He makes $12 an hour in a restaurant here in Austin, and he only takes home $10 of that. Okay? So $10 times 40 hours is $400 a week, and that can easily be eaten up by expenses and oil and gas and insurance and everything else, see? That he needs. So, I mean, it's just the incomes are just not out there. You have any last, we've got about a minute to go, Charlotte. Any closing comments?
Yeah, I just want to second your idea about, you know, I'm concerned about the illegal immigration coming over the border.
Right.
A lot of those are children, you know, unaccompanied. And,
right.
We got a humanitarian crisis in the continental United States and so that we got to start looking out for our own.
Right,
and,
right.
And,
right.
Yeah, if you're not supposed to be in the United States, especially if you're a criminal, we look forward to your departure.
Right. Obama was wrong on that, and Trump was right on that. So I want to thank everybody for listening out there. And, Charlotte, thanks a lot for your input on this, and you made some very good comments. And those click-offs are on our site right now. We'll make some corrections, but thank you for listening. And thank you, Charlotte, for being with us, and love you, babe.
Love you too, George. Have a good evening.
You too. Bye-bye.